running form does matter to a degree, but I think when you're just starting out, like, just run. Like, I think that's just the big message from kids, is just like, get out there and have fun and don't worry about what you look like.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, welcome to the Run to the Top podcast brought to you by Runners Connect. My name is Tina Muir and I'm looking forward to getting to know you more. So we're well into 2016. Last week we heard from health and fitness guru Ben Greenfield. I was very excited to record that one. And I have another great mind of our sport here for you today. So today I'm going to be talking to Mark Kennedy. He's a former kinesiologist, a USATF certified coach, and he is the co-founder of Healthynomics. Now, Healthynomics is a blog and podcast that's kind of along the same lines as Runners Connect. They also love the science behind the topics and they share some unbiased feedback, which we love. They also do some gear reviews, so you might enjoy that because I know that's something we don't do, but a lot of people request. You're going to hear today about Mark and Healthynomics, what he's up to with his training and his business, which is exciting. You're also going to hear about his personal journey a little bit, how he knocked 40 minutes off his marathon time by getting his fueling down and how he wants to help you guys with that. And then he also kind of talks about what we can learn from children about how to run better, which I found really interesting. And I'm hoping he's going to get maybe a series going on this. So without further ado, let's go meet Mark. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Mark.
Thanks very much for having me, Tina.
I'm excited to have you on. And for those who do not know, could you tell us just a little bit about you, your background, maybe what is Healthynomics and whatever you'd like to kind of share with us right now?
Sure. So yeah, my name's Mark Kennedy. I guess, well, going way back, I grew up on the west coast of Canada in Victoria. Grew up with, you know, being quite athletic, played, you know, every sport. All my friends played sports. That's kind of what I did. And then I went to university in Vancouver where I studied kinesiology and exercise physiology. So hence sort of my interest in the sports science end of things. I didn't really get into running or sort of pure running till after university. You know, up until then I was playing quite a lot of other sports, basketball being sort of my main focus. But yeah, I got into running probably in my mid-20s as sort of a way to keep fit. And Victoria, I'm not sure if you've been to Victoria before, but it's a little bit of a mecca for Canada for sort of endurance sport. Primarily because of the weather. It's so friggin' cold everywhere else in the winter that Victoria is very rarely gets snow in the winter. So because of the climate, a lot of endurance athletes sort of tend to go there and they can train all year round. And anyway, so yeah, some of my friends, we all got into running and a lot of it was social too. I remember every Saturday morning we would all go for a long run and then our reward was brunch and coffee afterwards. So fast forward to today, I live in Toronto with my wife and two little boys. I run a website called Healthynomics, which I started when I lived in London. It was sort of a health and fitness focus. I kind of wrote about whatever I wanted to. You know, one day it could be nutrition, the other day it could be about iliotibial band syndrome. It was very sort of all over the map, but I liked it because I mean, I work in the finance industry now and I sort of do this on the side. So the site's sort of a way for me to keep my interest in sports science and health and fitness alive and to help some others along the way. My site now primarily focuses on running, mostly for beginner runners. And I also have a podcast, not as regular and probably as high quality as yours, but I do have some really interesting guests on there. And I also have a running app, which maybe we'll talk about later. So, yep. That's sort of the brief history, and outline on me.
No, that's great. And, one of the reasons I really wanted to bring you on was, you did mention about, you know, obviously the website, and we are going to talk about that a lot more. But I love that you like to focus on the science and the real information, or the like no fluff, as you said and we say, which obviously a lot of our listeners are interested in. Do you think that's the like kinesiologist in you, or have you kind of always been that way, that you've loved the, you know, getting straight to the point rather than tiptoeing around it?
I've always kind of been that way. And, mm-hmm. But like you said, I don't know if it's because of my schooling background in university, but yeah, it's funny. I get a lot of questions even from friends, and I just have to like, you know, stop listening to all that, you know, rubbish here, or, you know, don't believe everything you read. And, but I got to be careful, right? Because it's hard. There's so much noise out there for people to filter out. So in some ways, you know, I feel bad for them, because nobody has an idea of what should I believe?
Yeah.
What's the best information or tips for runners out there? It's information overwhelm.
Mm-hmm. So you mean you don't believe that drinking green tea will make you drop 10 pounds instantly?
Well, it could, maybe for some people. It would work.
Well, we'll have to see if any of these hold up, but so far I haven't found any. And then your podcast, you kind of go talk to a variety of experts, such as Galloway, Rich Roll, Jay Descherry. But what made you decide you wanted to interview health and fitness professionals before your podcasting kind of really took off?
As opposed to just interviewing people in the running?
You kind of went after, you know, running related people, but you said your, you know, blog initially started as a health and fitness kind of website. So why did you kind of go towards the running aspect with that?
Oh, gotcha. I think primarily, I guess it was probably a lot of selfish reasons originally. I just like talking to all these really smart people. And if I could add value to anyone else who's listening, that was fantastic. But then the focus to primarily runners, it's, I guess, sort of just niching it down and sort of really hyper-focusing. Like, you know, I can help a broad range of people, but not many people. It would be hard to find the site or resonate with the site because, you know, one day, as I said, I'm talking about, I don't know, it could be someone talking about a paleo diet, and the next day it could be talking about someone about running injuries. So someone may not want to come back because it's like some topics are good, some are not for me. So I really just want to focus on helping one specific group of people. And for me, is, you know, I'm not an elite runner. I'm probably, you know, a middle of pack runner at best. I've done a couple marathons and quite a few half marathons, but I'm by no means an elite runner. So I feel like the beginner runners is where I could sort of really make my mark and help those people the most. So that's why I've sort of switched my focus to beginner runners. So I guess in the last year or so.
Mm-hmm. And before we go on, I want to ask you about that a bit more, but I find it funny that you're probably one of many people who has said, you know, oh, I'm not an elite runner, I'm a middle of the pack, but almost every person I have on here kind of says the same thing. It's always funny to me when you say that, because I mean, to me, everyone is out there running, so I don't really like, you know, I don't really see myself as any different to anyone else. But it's funny that you kind of clarify that, because a lot of people seem to do that. But I know a lot of our listeners are going to resonate with, you know, the middle of the pack, and that's who they feel I can identify with. So I'm sure they're going to appreciate that. So you said you've started focusing more on beginner runners, like in the, we talked a few minutes before the interview about, you know, you're working with absolute beginners, you know, people who have never, you know, run a step in their life. So how did it kind of go down that channel of where you started working with absolute brand new runners?
Really, I guess my idea was there's a lot of information out there, as I said, and I wanted to, what I basically started was sort of an email series or a course of material where I could sort of walk somebody through who basically says, I want to start running. I have no idea where to start. I have no idea, you know, about stretching or even what running shoes to buy. They feel like they have no motivation. They've tried in the past. They have no time. So there's just a lot of things. It's just sort of the regular person everyone struggles with. So I really wanted to develop sort of an outline or a trajectory for these people to follow. Hence why, you know, I started off with some of my interviews as you mentioned, Jay Dashari, which was great because he's sort of, he's an expert and he does a lot of work with elites, but he's also good at breaking everything down and sort of, my first lesson, I guess, in my email series is how do you prepare your body for running? Like, we're not even talking about running yet. We're just about talking about some things and some ways your body should be able to move before you start running. And I think that surprises a lot of people as well. They just think, oh, I should just start running. But so that's sort of my methodology. I really wanted to break it down to like, these are the ABCs of getting started. And as I said, it walks you through like some exercises to get your body ready for running, to going to the running shoe store and someone having no idea what to tell the person in the store. They're perhaps even intimidated. And just to give them some general information so they don't feel that intimidation and they're a bit more comfortable in the process.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense. And I love that you brought that up, that, you know, there are some precursors to running before you even get started, because have you found in your experience that most people, I mean, you mentioned people, you know, starting and kind of quitting before, but do you find most people just kind of go out there and then once they kind of get the bug or get like into it, then they start thinking, oh, well, maybe I should do this, but or get the right running shoes? Do you find a lot of people just jump straight into it first and you're kind of like retraining them?
Yeah, I think so. And it's kind of, I mean, I'm the same. Like when I trained for my first marathon, as I said, I did a lot of sports. I was like, oh, whatever. Like, my longest run to date was, 15 kilometers. And I'm like, well, why don't I do a 30K run if I feel fine? And then that's sort of my ego got in the way. And then all of a sudden a bunch of injuries crept up and, yeah, it was my first sort of training for marathon was a disaster. But I think a lot of people are the same. They're just like, they go out there and they run hard and they're like, oh, that was fine. And then, or they run too hard and they're out of breath and it's comfortable and it totally sucked. And they're like, why would I ever do that again? So you got to train people to just lower their bar and start really slowly. Because if you don't feel good at the end of your run, like why would you want to do it again?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great advice. And I think I can't remember where I heard it, but somewhere I read that most runners quit running over 10 times before it actually sticks. So that would make sense with, learning these different lessons and actually like having a course like yours actually puts people in the right channel so they are going to be able to stick with it. And what would you say, based on your experience of working with these people, would be your most important piece of advice for new runners?
I guess the most important advice is to become sort of a runner and a runner for life, to make it part of your lifestyle. You have to gain some consistency. And to get that, I think the sort of two big things are preventing injuries. Like if you get injured, you can't run. And then if you're not running, there goes your fitness and your consistency. So that's a big one. And then the other one is take it slow, like progress so slowly it hurts. That's kind of what I tell people. Like I really resonate with, I'm not sure if you've had Matt Fitzgerald on the podcast.
Oh, yeah,
you probably have. Yeah, three times. There you go. Yeah. I really resonate with his sort of 80-20 method of running. And I don't know if that's sort of how you train or not, but when I heard that, it made so much sense, because I know even for me, I used to spend a lot of my training in this middle ground, going not really fast and not slow. And I wasn't becoming a better runner or a faster runner as a result. So for these beginners, a lot of them I teach them is like, spend the majority of running going really, really, really slow. And I try to, tell them that the professionals do this as well. It's all relative. Like their mm-hmm. slow is super fast, but it's slow for them. So trying to get them to understand that concept, I'm really trying to do that and find ways to get that across. But I think that can really help a lot of beginners.
Yeah, that definitely is a tough lesson to learn. And I mean, it doesn't really matter what level you're at, but that is something that I think all runners struggle with. Even once you kind of get it down, you still have to keep reminding yourself that you do want to take those easy runs easy. And what has been your best method then for getting that method across? Do you have something that really like brings it home for most people?
Nothing in particular.
Kind of depends on the person.
Yeah, it depends on the person. And again, a lot of this is over email and stuff. So sometimes it's always harder through words to get a point across.
Yeah.
But I wrote a post one time about I just saw this an old man running one time, and it really motivated me. And I don't know how old he was. He must have been in his 80s, but he was going so slow. Like, my one-year-old boy would probably walk faster than what he was sort of doing in his jog, but I found it so motivating. And he was wearing like dress clothes, and I was like, it was awesome. Like, it didn't matter. Like, he was out there, and just because you're going slow or fast, even a slow runner, you're still getting health benefits from it. It's still going to do your mind a lot of good. So I can't remember the name of that post offhand, but I can send it to you after. But anyways, and just trying to convince people too. I know for a lot of beginners, they worry about their appearance and self-conscious about how they look. And to me, and I'm probably with you and lots of other sort of people who run more, I find it really motivating. If I see someone and I look at them, like, oh, they're a beginner runner, I can, you know, their running style is obviously not as polished, but it will become so. And I just think that's awesome. Like, congratulations for just getting out there.
Yeah.
So I don't look at them and, you know, laugh or look at their shoes and think, you know, to me, it's motivating.
Oh no, I totally agree. I see anyone I see out there, I'm always thinking, you know, good for you, especially if they do, you can tell they're a beginner. But I think I've mentioned this before, but one thing is that if you drive by someone who's running, you never think, oh, look how slow that person's going. You usually think, oh, I wish I was out there running, even
exactly.
If you've just finished running. So it's more about being out there. So yeah, I think of a lot of it is our own egos, but once we can kind of drill that home and realize that no one really cares what speed you're going, nor can they tell, then you kind of get the point across a bit better. And okay, so let's go into your running story a little bit more. You improved your second marathon by 40 minutes, which is huge. Improved your time. So how did you go about that, you know, making that big of a jump, for any listener who, you know, would like to look up to you for that reason?
Sure. The first marathon I did was in Dublin, Ireland in 2008. And I basically, you know, I'd been running, had a pretty good base, but I just pulled a random program probably from, you know, Runner's World or something. And I'm just like, oh, I'll use this. This is all I need. And that was fine. And then I started training, doing all the runs, doing the long runs. And then slowly some of the long runs, I'm like, this is not that hard. I can go farther. I can go longer. And that was my ego getting in the way. And I did go further and longer, and all of a sudden, little injuries started creeping up. I had a really good physio there, and I went there for one problem. I think it was IT band syndrome, and we started addressing that. I had to taper down my mileage for a little bit, started working on some strengthening the hips, etc., and then resume my training. And then I went in with another injury. It was plantar fasciitis. And again, I think I contribute a lot of it, just trying to do too much too soon, not progressing slowly enough. So my training probably for another couple of weeks, I had to ease back. So, but I was determined to do the race. So my training, you know, it didn't go as planned, but I was kind of like, that's my first one. I'm going to do it. And, I towed the line in Dublin, and the first 10 kilometers, it was awesome. You're feeding off the buzz, everything. And then I saw my wife. She was sort of moving around along the course. And a third of the way through, she saw me. I was fine. She saw me halfway through. I was fine. And then about 10 kilometers left, she was there. And she saw me running up, and she was jogging beside me. And she's like, are you okay? And I was like, it's like, not really. She's like, she said my face was gray. I had really slowed. I'd even actually walked a little bit up until then. And I hadn't really paid attention to my fueling at all. I had no fueling plan. Anyway, so the last 10 kilometers was a bit of a disaster. I was alternating between running and walking. And then I got to sort of kilometer 41, and all of a sudden I saw the crowd, and I, you know, finished the race. And I did it and I was really happy, really proud. It was an awesome experience, and I couldn't walk for a week. Then as I reflected, you know, a few months later, you know, I think it's probably everyone's story. After you first do your first marathon, you're like, I'm never, ever going to do that again. And then as time goes on, you're like, I want to do that again. And I'm not sure why, but anyway, so I didn't do my next marathon for, I guess it was like 2 or 3 years. And I got a coach this time, which I recommend to everyone. Doesn't matter if you're a beginner or a professional, everyone can benefit from a coach. So the coach really helped me stay on track with my training, pull me back when I was trying to be too aggressive with my training, and push me on my, you know, some of my faster runs that were my plan. And then I listened to a podcast, this is maybe a third of the way into training, that all about fueling. And it was with Jay Johnson, who maybe mm-hmm. he's been a guest on your podcast. Oh, he works with you guys, does some coaching.
Yep.
Okay. I need to connect the dots here. is his podcast with Dr. Trent Stellingworth, who works out of Victoria as well. And he works with Athletics Canada, sort of on the nutrition side of things. And it was sort of the best information I had heard on fueling, and it really simplified it. And after I listened to it, I was just like, wow, like, yes, my training wasn't as good as it could have been for my first marathon, but I didn't take in nearly enough fuel. So after that, I started looking into fueling a lot more. And developed a plan for me to follow. So when it came time for my second marathon, again, my wife followed me throughout the course, and I got to about, again, the 30-kilometer mark or something, and she saw me. I had a smile on my face. I felt good, had a bounce in my step. I mean, my time was, of course, way better, but it was just a way more pleasant experience. And I trained a lot better and I was smarter and the coach helped, but I think the fueling was a huge aspect as well. It just made the world a difference for me.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we obviously, most people listening right now have heard something about how important fueling is. And maybe you're at the point where you're thinking, oh, I don't know. I mean, I'm not hungry before I race, or I think I'm okay. But, you know, hearing that story, hopefully you see that how much of a difference that can make, and how, you know, Mark is saying that was the biggest influence in that improvement in time. So then from there, you kind of developed your own app, which you based just off your kind of own experience. So can you tell us a little about the Fuel Your Run app?
Sure. Yeah. As I said, so I became sort of this fueling geek. I was just like, wow, this is awesome. I had a spreadsheet basically for my my second marathon. And I can't remember. I think I may have even had that little printout of my spreadsheet in my pocket or something. And I just sort of looked at it, so I knew exactly what I was taking at each fueling station, whether it was a gel or a chew, or sports drink, or just water, or combination. So like I had it, like I knew every station, I knew exactly what kilometer mark those stations were. And I was like, there's gotta be an easier way to do this or to train for it. So I had this idea for an app. So I hired someone to help me code it. And so I came up with the ideas, and a lot of the research, of course, was not my research or science behind it, but I used other people like Dr. Trent Stellingworth, his guidance and stuff. So I sort of embedded that in the app, and basically how it works, there's a few sort of two sample fueling plans, one for the marathon, whereby sort of the guideline is to get in 60 grams of carbohydrate per hour. And then there's one for the half marathon where sort of a rule of thumb is to try to get 30 grams of carbohydrate per hour. So I had a couple sample programs where you get reminded in your earbuds to when to fuel, what to take, whether it be sports drink or a gel. Most of the gels have pretty much the same nutritional makeup as far as number of carbohydrates in them, and the same with sports drink. They all differ slightly, but and I also had an aspect of the app where you could create your own fueling pan, so you could get, so if you have a long run when you really want to practice, you can get reminders based on certain distances, and you can create those distances to simulate your actual race. So if you look at your race map and you know there's a fueling station at the 5 kilometer mark and the 11.3 kilometer mark, you can mark it exactly what you're going to have in the race. And of course, a lot of people carry their own fuel, so you can tweak it for that. So that's sort of how the idea came about. And that's sort of the Cole's notes of how it works. And the funny thing is, I haven't done another marathon since I developed the app. So I need I did use it in training, but I need to do another marathon to really reap the benefits of it. But I have had some feedback from other people who used it and they like it. It's of course really specific, and people, you know, all have their own apps and sports watches that they use primarily. So getting people to switch and try it out is that's a whole another thing. But anyways, I've had some good feedback, and if it's a useful tool for anyone, then that's great.
Yeah, I definitely will be putting a link to that in the show notes at runnersconnect.net/RC91. So if anyone wants to give that a try in your upcoming marathon, you should definitely check it out and, you know, let Mark know what you think of it. And then just, this is just me and my mind running here. Do you think you could eventually get to the point where someone could, you know, select their race from a list of races, you know, obviously the big ones, and then it all comes up? Or does it already have that? You know, you were saying about, you know, if you have a, if they have a mile 11.3, then, you know, it automatically comes up and says these.
Yeah, it's an awesome idea. And I've thought of that as well.
Yeah,
it's kind of, I haven't done that yet, but like, yeah, it would make a lot of sense. You could throw in, you know, London Marathon, New York, Berlin, just some of the big ones, and then build it out as you go along. I haven't done that, but actually I think I did a blog post one time where I made a spreadsheet for a few different marathons. I think I did one for Philadelphia, one for New York, where people know exactly where the fueling stations are. Because it's always hard. Some of the maps they give you online, some of them are good, and some of them they're hard to read and stuff. So anyways, no, that's a good idea.
Yeah, no, I wasn't trying to steal things. That came to me while we were talking, and it does kind of, one thing that I want you guys to take from this is, you know, it's important to research before, whether you use the app or whether you use another means, to, you know, make sure you really should look into whatever the marathon you're doing, whatever the fueling source is. If you're not going to carry it yourself, you should try it. Like if it's a goo gel, if they supply goo, then make sure you practice with goo. But it all comes down to, you know, you want to practice this fueling and get it right, because it makes such a big difference when it comes to the race. So then, speaking of nutrition, you've had quite a lot of guests on your podcast and you've researched it a lot. But would you like to share a few maybe tidbits of information about nutrition that you've learned and found particularly interesting?
As far as running, or
anything to do with nutritional information that runners may be interested in?
I mean, my focus has really been on sort of fueling for the marathon or half marathon.
So what numbers sort of have you come up with, or do you not know them offhand, of you know,
what people for the numbers take of the podcast, or
no, for the fueling during the races, just for people listening if they want to take notes?
As I said, there's a really good, again, I got this from Dr. Trent Stellingworth, but his rule of 15 is basically you should aim for 15 grams of carbohydrate every 15 minutes. Some people take even more. It's sort of based on what your stomach can handle. And again, that's why you need to practice. I always pronounce his name wrong, but Haley Gebrselassie,
Gebrselassie.
Yes.
Yeah.
there is a really good article somewhere about his fueling for one of the marathons. And he takes a huge amount, up to, I think, 90 grams of carbs an hour. And so, I mean, I don't think a lot of people, of course, that requires practice, but a huge amount. Another thing I learned too is a lot of people are really focused on hydration and drinking water. Yes, it's important. It's actually more important, especially if it's hot and humid outside. But what they found is the elites, you know, like you and professionals, the people with the best performances actually amongst the most dehydrated at the end. So you know, being dehydrated is not necessarily a bad thing. You do want to keep your fluids at the sort of the right level, but that's part of running. You will get dehydrated, and I guess sort of training or doing some of your training runs without any fuel or water, mm-hmm. That helps you sort of practice that and being just preparing your body more. My coach had me doing some of my long runs. I think I did up to maybe 25K without any fuel. So basically getting up in the morning, no breakfast and heading out. And that just sort of prepares your body for how it's going to feel at the end when your glycogen stores are down, you are a bit dehydrated. But the idea is you're going to feel rotten during the training, but then when you get to your race, you're going to feel like $1 million because you'll be allowed to fuel and hydrate better. So I don't know. Is that something you do in your training or?
I did do a few of those runs actually. I think I did, I don't know what it is in K, but I did, I think maybe a 21 or 22 miler once or twice. And, didn't have any fuel. I think I did it one time where I had breakfast, but then didn't have fuel during, and then I did one time without anything. I think it is good practice, but I also think that's a good point you bring up, that it, even if you don't do it with your long runs, you do some runs without anything, just especially like you said, like the drinking and stuff. Like I never have a drink during my run if it's under 12-14, I would never have a drink. It is important to practice some of those. And also, Tim Noakes has done a lot of work, which I will put a link to his interview in the show notes. We did have him on the podcast, and he talked about, people basically drowning because they're drinking too much. And I think mm-hmm. that's a common mistake that a lot of new runners make. So I think that's good you brought that up. So then let's talk about something completely different that I was kind of curious about based on kind of researching about you, which is you're passionate about raising money for, and now it's my chance to say that I can't say this right, or maybe I can't, mucopolysaccharide. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's
related
right.
diseases. Can you tell us a little bit about that and why it's important to you?
Sure. One of my best friends has a condition called mucopolysaccharidosis. It's MPS2. There's a few different types of it. His is MPS2, also commonly known as Hunter's syndrome. Basically, he was born without a specific enzyme that helps him helps his cells rid themselves of cellular waste. So it manifests in his joints. It stunts your growth. So I can't remember how old he is now. He's like 37. He's got a birthday coming up. It stunts your growth. So he's only about 4'10". Most kids born with MPS2 don't live past the age of 5, 6, 7 years old.
Wow.
And he's been lucky enough to, he took part of in a drug trial in Chapel Hill, University of North Carolina, which has really, really helped him. He's noticed some of his biggest complaints with just sort of joint soreness and just more energy and everything. The drug trials really helped him. So for a lot of my races, I've actually tried to raise money for MPS research. It's a very rare disorder. And Canada, unfortunately, is one of the only developed nations that doesn't have a rare disease platform or program to sponsor these drugs. So it's very expensive for kids to get these drugs. Mm-hmm. Without sort of any sort of government help or being on a trial, it costs upwards to $300,000 a year.
Wow.
So that's just, not possible for most people. A few years ago, we also did a bike for MPS, so we biked down the top, from the top of Vancouver Island to the Southern Tip, and we raised, I think, about $250,000, and it was great. So that's sort of a lot of sort of my doing my runs to raise money and so forth, that normally it goes to that cause just because it's dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of makes me think about how funny it is when you think about it, that money we raise for charity, for various charities as runners, that we are essentially paying to put ourselves through pain.
Yeah.
And then giving the money that we raise to, you know, someone else. And yeah, it's for a good cause, but do you have any thoughts? I'm just kind of thinking out loud here of what makes runners kind of so special and giving that, you know, we want to do this for other people and raising money. You don't really see many other sports. I mean, you mentioned cycling, you see a few of those, but marathons and running events are, you know, every weekend. So,
yeah, I think you're right. I think it resonates with people because a lot of people see running as being painful and it's a sacrifice. You're sacrificing your body and for someone else. I got to think that's why. Also, running is such a huge sport. Like it's such an easy sport to get involved in. I mean, you just need a pair of shoes and you can do a run. So I think it's really accessible for other people. Whereas, you know, cycling requires, you know, a lot of gear and it's mm-hmm. expensive and it's you need, you know, some safe areas to do it. Right. I just think running is really accessible, and whether you run, you know, do a 1 kilometer walk for charity or 5 kilometers or an ultra marathon, I think it all helps. And, you know, everyone can resonate with that.
Yeah, yeah. And everyone has their own, you know, causes and own charities that interest them and that they want to raise money for. So I just think it's like a wonderful thing that we have about our sport is, you know, how good the people are that do it. And then something else that I wanted to ask you about, it may be scratching your head a little to remember this, but I remember reading something about a recent article you did about what your 3-year-old taught you about breathing. You kind of share that with our listeners? As I thought that'd be something interesting.
Sure. Yeah. Breathing is one of the most common questions I get from my beginners. I can believe it. You know, when you do a hard workout and if you're unfit, and breathing sucks, it burns, doesn't feel good. I was out with my 3-year-old. We were at soccer field just up the street, and we often do races. He likes to race me, and I love it too. We had a race, and we did the full length of the football pitch, and I was amazed. He can run a long way. I was getting tired, and then we walked back. He's like, "I want to do it again." Like, "Are you sure?" He's like, "Yep, let's do it again." So we did it, and he was breathing really loud and getting tired, and I was like, "Okay, you know." So we walked back again. He's like, "One more." And we did it again, and he was still breathing really hard. And we did that one, but I noticed something. He just, on that last one, he still wanted to do it, but he just slowed down. And he did the whole run, and we just went really slow. And it became less of a race and more about just, let's just get to the other end of the field. And I thought, this is really cool. Like, this is how I wish adults were. Sometimes you mm-hmm. forget this and your ego gets in the way. But like, when you're learning to run, if you're feeling out of breath, like, slow down, take a walk break. Like, it's common sense.
You don't have to quit. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If you're walking, you're not quitting. So just slow down and or walk, catch your breath, and then go again. I really liked that, and I thought it would resonate with a lot of my readers. I think it did. So I think we can learn a lot of lessons from kids. Another thing too is just watch kids move. It's just effortless the way they squat and they keep their back nice and straight. So just looking at that too, it's like, wow, yeah, you can learn a lot of lessons from your kids.
Yeah, yeah. They take the complication out of things, don't they? They just kind of do what's natural and what we were made to do. It's funny, when I was at the UVA Speed Clinic, one of the chiropractors, Todd Nieder, he had me do some DNS. I can't remember what that stands for now. You might know. But he had me do all these exercises that were essentially baby movements, like things that babies would do. But it kind of teaches your body to act naturally how it was supposed to act rather than how we've kind of conditioned ourselves to act. And it just made me think of that when you were talking about that. And Have you learned any other lessons from your kids? I'm wondering if you should eventually move to the point where you start doing like a series on lessons I learned from my kids or something.
Yeah. another thing too is just their movements are so natural and pure, and even just the way kids run. Like, you know, some kids run, you know, really nicely, sort of the way you picture like good running form. Mm-hmm. And other kids are like this, and it's like, it doesn't matter. Like,
yeah.
You know, the way you run, if just starting, like, yes, you know, running form does matter to a degree, but I think when you're just starting out, like, just run, like, do what feels natural. And over time, I think what most runners feel, and I look at myself at some video of myself running from, say, 5-6 years ago to my running now, and it's quite a bit different. Like, my form is a lot better, and not because I've focused on anything. I haven't really considered form at all, but it's your body naturally will find the best ways to move the more you do it and the more you practice. So I think that's just the big message from kids, is just like, get out there and have fun and don't worry about what you look like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it is we should continue to see running as play rather than seeing it as this chore that we have to do because we don't want to put on weight. So I think that's another yeah. lesson that I've found that kids kind of can teach us.
Yeah, for sure.
So then what is the future direction of Healthynomics? Have you kind of just thought about where you'd like to take it or what the future looks like for you in general?
I think with Healthynomics, I just continue wanted to focus on helping beginner runners. And I'd like to somehow, I'm not sure how, but like develop a program for them to follow that's basically just a lower baseline than what's out there. There's a lot of great programs out there, Couch to 5K. But I am getting a lot of feedback where some people are saying, you know what, Couch to 5K, I'm not quite ready for that, or it's a bit too much. So get something to really help introduce some new people to running and really starting from ground zero and not worrying about the endpoint, just trying to get them with some consistency, injury-free, and enjoying it. And once people are enjoying their running, I think they're more apt to make it part of their life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as far as myself, just keeping busy with my family and my two boys, keep me busy. But yeah, I'm going to probably sign up for another race. I live in Toronto, so there's some good races around here. We got the winter coming up, so I actually kind of like training in the winter. I know some people look at me like I'm a freak. But yeah, I've done a lot of miles and sort of minus 10, minus 20 degrees Celsius along the lake with your balaclava freezing over top of your mouth. And anyways, I quite like it. It hardens you up.
Well, you said that you live in the more mild part of Canada, so maybe you need to move to one of the more intense parts where the winter is.
Well,
more...
actually, I live in Toronto now.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so I grew up in Victoria, but I live in Toronto now.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And I can't complain. My wife grew up in Winnipeg, which is, some people say, the coldest city on earth. So she's like, oh, quit your complaining.
Fair enough, fair enough. Okay, well, I just have a few more questions for you. Quick fire kind of questions. So,
sure.
What is your greatest piece of advice you've ever been given?
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Or your favorite quote, if you'd rather give that.
Best piece of advice I've ever been given. You know, for me, is always a guy who thinks too much. You know, as a young athlete, I used to get in my mind too much, and often track and field events, I would get sick to my stomach. I'd be so nervous. So I think one thing is just like, don't worry about the outcome so much.
Great.
Yeah, that's something sort of I would, if I could go back and give my 10-year-old self some advice, I would say, don't worry about what happens. Just go out there and have fun and do it.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Really good advice. And then what's your favorite running book or blog if you had to pick?
Running book, I really like, I really enjoyed the 80-20 running by Matt Fitzgerald. I love all his books. So,
yeah, he's got a new one out. Have you read that one yet?
I haven't. No, have you?
No, I haven't. I'm reading it. Actually, by the time this goes live, I'm hoping I have read it. So how bad do you want it? I will put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah. Running blogs. I love, obviously, Runners Connect. I've talked to Jeff a couple times and have interviewed him on my site. I like Jason Fitzgerald, Strength Running, a lot. Yeah. I really like Coach Jay Johnson's work. And I like his podcast a lot. He does some Q&As, which I think are great. And then other ones I sort of like sort of for more sort of the motivational and stories. I do like Rich Roll's podcast. Yep. More so for not necessarily just for runners and advice for runners, but just really good stories to you know, go do your long run and just sort of forget about your running and just listen to a really cool and motivational story.
So if someone was going to listen to one episode of your podcast, who would you recommend they go? Who was your favorite one, if you had to pick?
One episode. You know what? I'm just going to go to my quickly to my archives here and have a quick look. I think I know which one, but let's just see here. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go with any of the two with Jay Dashari.
Okay. Yep. All right.
I've got a couple with them, and I can send you those links if you want. But yep. Yeah, I really like how he sends his message and really sort of dumbs things down for beginners to help them get ready to run.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll put links to those in the show notes so people can take a listen. Okay, what is your pre-race meal? If you have a set one.
You know, it's not set. I would just say, yeah, nothing out of the norm. Like I typically eat like cereal or toast or a smoothie in the morning. But if I had to say there would be one pre-race meal, I'd just say it'd be peanut butter and jam on toast.
Okay, good. You're kind of sticking with the American thing there, although it's peanut butter and jelly over here.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and then finally, what is your proudest moment?
Proudest moment? These are tough questions. Probably. Oh, geez. I mean, a lot of it's probably, I look to my family.
Probably.
Yeah, you know, meeting and getting married to my wife was a pretty proud moment. Probably.
Is she listening in the other room?
She's not, but I'll have her listen to this episode later. But I would say that, but also just, I don't know, you know, my family, my boys are really young. So just proud of them. Like, you know, they're 3 and 1, but, you know, just little things, but it's amazing how proud you can feel of the little things they do. Our oldest boy started junior kindergarten this year and he comes home with stories and he's learned all these new things. And it's just like, wow, this is, it's really amazing. And you feel proud.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. And I look forward to someday hopefully having them be able to say that myself. But nice for now, I'll live through you. Okay, well, Mark, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed getting to know you. I'm sure many of them have seen the Healthynomics website before because, like I mentioned, many of them love the science behind things. But if not, you should definitely check it out. But we appreciate your time and wish you the best of luck for the future.
That's great. Thanks very much for having me. I really enjoyed our chat.
Thank you. I'm sure you can see why we love Mark at Runners Connect and we love Healthynomics. He's very to the point, but he's such a kind and genuine guy. I wonder what else we can learn from children about how to run. Probably more than we think we can. So if you've enjoyed today's podcast, I would love if you could subscribe, which you can do by visiting the brand new podcast page, which can be found at runnersconnect.net/run-to-the-top. Or you can sign up to our email newsletter, if you prefer texting, by texting the word Tina to 66866. That's Tina to 66866. So I hope you enjoyed it today, and I hope you have a wonderful week. I will talk to you soon.